Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have a good show for you tonight. This is a what to look for versus the Colts in the first preseason game. Joined by my co-host for matchups during the season, Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how are you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Glad to be back for the preseason outlook on what to expect for the games. Looking forward to the matchup show as well. This is going to be a very fun season.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And, you know, the potential for it to be not fun, for falling anything short of the ultimate prize, is just, I think, an amount of leverage that people have put on this season that is fairly much unfair. Yep. The Baltimore Ravens, but it is a very good football team, and this is certainly an opportunity this year to win the Super Bowl. All right, so Frazier and I will be doing two shows per week during the season to preview the offense and the defense before each game. It's usually the last two shows of the week. Often will be Saturday. They get posted morning and evening kind of thing, and you'll have a chance to listen to those on Saturday or on your drive to the game, even on Sunday if you missed before then. I do think that what Frazier and I provide you is typically going to be a little more in-depth than most of the pregame shows out there. So it's not a bad substitute for your drive into to the game itself. We heard a little bit from John Harbaugh today at the podium. He said that Lamar and Derrick Henry would not play in this game. It's exactly the way he put it. I don't think Lamar or Derrick Henry are going to play in any of the preseason games. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, 100% agree. I don't think we need, especially Derrick Henry, we don't need any more mileage on him. As much as we're expecting from him this year, we need to keep him fresh. Lamar, I wouldn't mind just getting the groove of things, just offensively, just getting into some kind of a rhythm. But I wouldn't want any of them really in the preseason regardless.
Right. And I don't want any of that injury risk for Lamar. Obviously, the entire season is banked on him. Yep. Derrick Henry would be a horrible loss if he happened, but the Ravens actually could probably muddle through and try and be effective the way Keaton Mitchell has played at camp and try and make that work. But they can't do it without Lamar. They absolutely cannot do it
at all.
I expect very little in the way of scheme this week. Now, this is something we talk about almost every week on matchups. And the funny thing is, in preseason, there are multiple reasons why, but they really don't ever get away from just a kind of a standard committed nickel set of packages they have out there. They'll occasionally go to base, you know, where they have a third defensive lineman, they have no slot corner, but most of the time it's a standard nickel or it's a base, but they don't use any of their rush nickel packages or any uncovered nickel. I would not expect to see. I don't expect to see any jumbo nickel, where they play only one inside linebacker. And part of that is just the positional needs are such that, or the positional depth is such that you really need all those players to play at their regular position to get everybody a reasonable amount of playing time.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the reason why fans get turned off by the preseason, because it just doesn't make sense for the actual NFL fan to watch the games and it's just base defense or regular nickel, regular, if you get dime, it's it can get boring at times, but for analysts like us during a game, we look into these things to make sure that the players that we look at are actually making an impact and doing their jobs when they're in position to make plays.
Yeah. And during the preseason, another element of it is they kind of want to see how a player will do, even if he's not completely in his comfort zone. So if he's a weaker coverage linebacker, they still want to see him on third down and see, you know, what he can do on that down, even though it's not optimal for the team. And that's fine. You can try those kind of things in the preseason.
Yep, I like all those things. I think the main thing I like during the preseason is watching how the offense doesn't come out super sluggish. Like, I remember, I think 3 or 4 years ago when we had Trace McSorley, that preseason game against the Washington Commanders, we didn't move the ball at all. I think it's interesting to see how Todd Monken just calls the game in terms of just, I wouldn't even know what to call it, base offense, but just regular pro style offense, and see how effective these guys can be. Guys like Keith Kirkwood or Dayton Wade, just seeing what kind of plays they can make on offense.
They certainly have a lot of depth, and it's a lot of veteran depth at places like wide receiver, at tight end. They're you have fair depth even without Isaiah Likely. So it'll be interesting to see how some of this plays out. It definitely is one where I think they might not have all the defensive depth that they've had in past years to just steamroll teams in the second half. And it's, right. It's players you wouldn't expect. It's, you know, having Darrell Worley or Tony Jefferson in the second half at safety, that can be just an enormous advantage versus a young quarterback.
Yeah, and we don't want Malachi Starks back there, so we're probably going to be real short.
Yeah, Starks will get some playing time in this one, I would predict, but I don't think it'll be too much. You know, two series maybe.
Do you expect Braid or Kane to get the nod after Starks?
Yeah, so I think Kane is at camp, separated himself from the others, and I think the real competition for the last safety spot, it could very well be they carry five, but if they carry four, I think that the last spot is now up between Lowry and Braid.
Okay.
And the other one will probably be on the practice squad. Lowry's looked pretty good at times. Braid has been, he's been hurt. He hasn't looked great at times. And other times, he's really looked like more of a downhill player. And that's what he was in previous preseason, in the last year's preseason, that he made a bunch of good plays, but they were all around the line of scrimmage. They weren't right. You know, playing deep half field responsibilities. Want to talk about some young players who are missing time here. Obviously, Emory Jones leads the list. He's still on NFI. He may not come off the entire year. I'm still waiting for some sort of a surgery, announcement that is basically going to put him out. The way, you know, we've waited for that all year for Grayson Rodriguez, and then for
right. Him, unfortunately. I was waiting on that for a long time. I don't know why they just waited this long to get him surgery. Now he's not going to be back until 27, right?
No, I think it's not having Tommy John surgery. So I think that I think the prognosis is better than that, but I don't know that it's spring training either. So we'll see how long it is. He has to have some sort of abradement, and not a,
Tommy John.
Yeah. Ligament repair. Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Well, let's keep talking. Besides Emory Jones, who obviously, it would be really nice if they had his, you know, versatility and it, you know, his prospective talent out there in the offensive line this year. If he's going to be on NFI, you know, obviously I think you and I would both say that it'd be better if he were on NFI for the whole year. We saw that work out for Voorhees so far and not work out for Ajabo. All right. We might've lost Frazier here, but let me keep going here. Marcus Major, a concussion. He'll miss time. He wasn't going to make the team, but you know, he could have maybe had a practice squad position. A lot of that would have been determined on, is he a reasonable practice squad elevation or even a third running back elevation if they were to pick up some injuries. But honestly, at this point, I think his chance to make the team or the practice squad is kind of remote. And then Robert Longerbeam, this is a really more serious issue. He's a draft pick from this year. A guy the Ravens would probably really like to make the 53, a guy I thought would compete in the absence of Ardarius Washington to be the backup slot corner. That really hasn't happened. He's played basically on the outside during camp, which means this missed time is really hurting him. It's a very tight battle at the outside cornerback positions for the Ravens at camp. Are you back, Frazier?
Yeah, I can hear you. Just to comment on Marcus Majors, I think that running back room is pretty much sealed up all the way to the practice squad with Ali. If no one really pops out on the screen during the preseason, I think Ali is designated to be the practice squad guy, and we have our three guys leading the pack. So I guess for him it sucks, but I don't think it's really a factor in the composition of the team. And then longer beam, it is unfortunate because we know very well here you cannot have enough good corners, and not having him out there to at least see what he's capable of doing is tough.
Right. Not a player who's obviously gone. If he goes to the practice squad, I guess it's possibly could be. A lot of it depends on depth around the league, but I think he is a guy who before the end of the season would be pilfered off the practice squad if he doesn't get raised to the 53. So that, as we always talk about it, that the replacement level drops during the season with attrition at cornerback, and longer beam is the kind of player who would eventually look attractive to someone at some point during the year.
I agree.
Okay. All right. So order of entry is something I look at every preseason game. It's certainly something I'd encourage people to watch for. Or just read about it in my articles after the game. But look at in what order are players coming in. It's really bad to be playing in the second half of a preseason game and having a significant role there. There's backups that take you further down. The camp. Dearness Johnson, for example, might get a number of second half carries for the Ravens in this one. Ali might, with Marcus Major not available. But you don't want to be playing at the end of a football game, because it probably means the club would prefer not to take less risk on another player.
Yep, and it's very evident why those players play at the end of the game. You can see the quality of product definitely goes down. For me, the order of entry really is important for the offensive line. Yep. I really want to see where it starts out in terms of who's going to be starting five. I want to see where Ben Cleveland rotates in. And then also, I don't know if we see anyone else on the starting rotation swing left or right, whether it be Falele or Voorhees.
Okay. Yeah, it's conceivable. In some ways, I kind of hope it feels like the offensive line starters have already been determined at this point. I don't think that necessarily means Voorhees and Cleveland get no time. Falele, I would expect to get starter treatment, meaning I don't expect him to see more than a series or two in this game. And I expect the same out of both of the starting offensive tackles. In fact, I'll change that. I don't expect Ronnie Stanley to play at all. I expect that Joe Noteboom will start the game and at left tackle and not play the whole game himself. He himself is fairly critical to this team now in the absence of Emory Jones, in order to be the first replacement tackle is an important position. And then with Rosengarten, I'd expect him out of there pretty soon as well. And it'll be interesting to see how they fill in at the tackle spots. They've got guys. They've got, you know, a 6'9" guy, Lichtenan, and they've got some other
Carson Vinson.
Carson Vinson, yeah. Carson Vinson won't see a snap this season. He won't play
even during the preseason.
I'm sorry. Say again.
When you say this season, you're saying the regular season only, right?
Regular season or postseason, he will not play a single snap, would be my prediction. Yes, he could play in the preseason. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
Yeah. So if Carson Vinson, it has to be a really strange set of circumstances, because he's got the weirdest position on the team, and it's an unusual position that the Ravens are in because they're so tight on their 53, is that he'll be on the 53-man roster. They can't release him or they'll lose him. Same thing happened with Gregory Sinat, if you want the comparable player from a few years ago. And so if they're committed to him as a developmental player, they have to carry him on the 53. And he effectively is like the equivalent of a walking wounded player from past years that we've had, a guy who's injured but can't play. In his case, he could play and he could be activated if you had two injuries on the offensive line, because I think they'll carry 10. If you had two injuries on the offensive line and you needed him in order to dress eight, and the eighth man is free, then he could dress, and then his path to actually playing would be the Ravens blow the other team out in that game, and then he goes in and he plays one series at the end, and he gets his NFL debut that way. But it doesn't obviously affect anything about his tenure or whatever to do so, and it obviously wouldn't be a big risk the Ravens were taking to get him in the game at that point.
I appreciate the articulation there, Ken. You put that out very well. I think you're very right, though. Carson Vissen is not going to see a snap this year. I do want to see what he's capable of. I was at the joint practice. Sorry, I was at the stadium practice, mm-hmm. and got to see him live for the first time. And he's huge.
Yep.
Definitely has to stay in front of his guys, mirror better. But that's all the things that we're going to be waiting for him to be 1 year away from being a year away.
Yeah, long arms, decent feet. You know, the Ravens had a rare opportunity to make a pick that was developmentally largely the fact that they signed both of their offensive tackles for 2 years with kind of an option for a third on Stanley. And that might be an option by both sides, frankly, at the rate that third year is paid. Okay, there are other positions where order of entry is important, but I think we're going to hit on that in some of our other content here, so let's just move on. There's not that many things to be determined by the preseason this year, and we'll have more to talk about by next week in terms of who played well in the first week and building upon that, but let's just talk about what some of those things are. I want to hear some of your thoughts on this too, but to me, the last spots at cornerback are one of the interesting things that still remain. They have Longerbeam sitting out there. They have Kone, who's out there, and they have JAD, who I don't think is secure making the team. And let me see if there's anybody else I can think of who's Tampa. Down there. Yeah, TJ Tampa. Now, Tampa, I think, is relatively secure in terms of making the roster, but his spot on the outside may not be secure. He may be a fifth guy, a sixth guy, a guy they decide, you know what? We think you'd be great at safety right now because we don't think you're playing corner all that well. Any of those is really possible. TJ Tampa in camp has not looked that great, and he had a PD today, which was nice, but I'd say he's looked slow. He's looked like he's not been keeping up with receivers well, and giving up a fair amount of separation on some of the go routes, for example.
And that's tough to hear. I think the Ravens put themselves in a good position with bringing in Jair Alexander to give them four stout corners that can pretty much play anywhere on the field except Nate. He's mostly on the outside, but I think the Ravens have given themselves an opportunity to get three more corners in this battle. I know we're talking about the last corner depth, but there's opportunity to have three, one on the current roster, one on the practice squad, and one on speed dial if needed. So I think we can have all those opportunities available for these last cornerback spots. I'm really interested to see the deployment as well. I know that's a point we made. I want to see how they view this quote-unquote starting rotation for the first preseason game, and then, like you've mentioned before, who's playing in the third and fourth quarter where it really doesn't matter.
Right. Is there how would you rank those four cornerbacks right now, including Longerbeam, JAD, Tampa, Kone, and Longerbeam? What would be your order? I'm going to write mine down while I have it.
I think I would go Kone. Oh, man. Tampa, JAD, and Longerbeam. I put Longerbeam last because he's been hurt, but JAD. Yeah. I would put JAD last if Longerbeam wasn't hurt.
Okay. That's I don't think that's unreasonable. I think if Longerbeam was healthy, I think they'd be looking at JAD as a fourth year player and being a guy they'd give up on. Based on what I've seen at camp, I have Tampa as third, and that means JAD, as I've got it right now, probably makes the team. And I think Kone would be number one in that group as of right now, and Tampa three. But honestly, those first three guys are very close, and I'm the same as you. I have Longerbeam at the bottom of that list. You can make a case for any one of the three guys to be the fifth corner, and you can make a case for any one of the three guys to be the seventh corner and therefore out and on the 53. Potentially a practice squad guy, potentially lost. You have to take that risk, obviously, if you cut him. I do think that Kone would be probably the biggest risk of being taken to start the year, and that Tampa might be the second biggest risk.
I would say JAD is one of those guys who's probably not going to get a lot of looks unless the team wants to bring him in on the practice squad, which he's still technically a young player, which it's possible.
Yeah. And it's, this is not that I think JAD is terrible or anything, but I think that all teams recognize that JAD is a 1 year rental, whereas
right.
other guys who some who the Ravens have just drafted, but they somehow, you know, released might be a value. Yeah. Okay. How about something else you'd like to see determined in the preseason? Do you have anything specific you want to talk about?
I think specifically, I would like to see the last wide receiver position behind Tylan Wallace. I think it obviously everyone wants to see Tez Walker, but there are other wide receivers on this team that are performing. And I was able to see that at the practice, the stadium practice, and someone that caught my eye was Kirkwood. I know that's the flashy name right now because he was making plays, but even last year during the preseason, I think he came on strong, and he's just that big body receiver that we don't have on the outside right now. I know Tez is developing to be that guy, but I feel like Kirkwood's NFL ready now, like fix for that issue.
Yeah. I mean, look, Kirkwood is certainly a veteran player. He's been around. I mean, he's almost 31 years old. He'll be 31 the day after Christmas.
Wow.
So he's not a young man. There's not a whole lot of future in him. I'm trying to think if the Ravens have him. No, he's played 2 years in New Orleans, two at Carolina, two more at New Orleans. Last year, it looks like he did not get on the field for the Ravens at all. So obviously didn't pick up a year of eligibility or a year of tenure. And I have to look at the Ravens roster to see where he actually is. But I mean, he's not, the Ravens are not invested in Keith Kirkwood's future. So I think while he could be a guy who could come in and help them for a game, he also would be a guy like Sims or Anthony Miller that they would have at the top of the practice squad and available that way.
Fair. What have you seen from I also want to see the punting returner.
Yeah.
I definitely want to see who wins that.
Four guys returning punts so far: Anthony Miller, Dayton Wade, LaJonte Wester, and Tylan Wallace. And I would say in the last couple of days, LaJonte Wester has probably separated himself a little bit. He did have a fumble, but the way that John Harbaugh describes he wants a punt to be fielded, which is shoulder square, catch the ball high against your chest, or catch the ball high, and the catch is more important than the run, is telling me basically he doesn't like the Campanero style of get into a track star stance as you're catching the ball as much. And I'd say that really describes Wester to a T. In fact, it describes a lot of the guys. They all track the ball pretty well. But Wester, I think, you know, being a rookie and having the value that he adds, potentially the offense as well, are two things that you know, are way in his favor. Wallace is going to make the team either way because he's important in a number of ways to the team. But
yes.
If you're talking about Wester versus Wade or Wester versus Anthony Miller, I think that Wester gives you more as a receiver and more as a misdirection player.
That's fair. It's unfortunate because I do like Wade a lot. I think he showed us a lot of stuff last year, and he's still showing us a lot of plays this year, even with the first team with Lamar. He's showing plays in camp. So I'll be interested to see which way the team goes. But either way, I'll be disappointed because I don't want to see Wester go, nor do I want to see Wade go. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Wade, it was remarkable that Wade did not get a chance last year with all of the troubles that the Ravens had with the punt return game. They never gave him a chance. You know, they gave it to Sims, they gave it to Deontay Johnson, you know, they gave it to Tylan Wallace even after some things went wrong last year. And it just, you know, the mistakes were still being made, but they never gave it to Wade. And I kind of wondered, you know, what the hell is happening at practice that Wade is not one of the guys getting a chance? Because there's a lot of upside there if it works out. He's a first year player, and these other guys are, you know, many year veterans who are, the Ravens have no stake in their future.
Yeah, John, I've noticed John has an issue playing rookies. Unless they're like high pedigree, first round, second round, then he's very hesitant to let the leash go. Even with J.K. Dobbins, I mean, he was a ferocious back out of college. He had the potential to be top back in the league, and we held him back a lot in his first year. So,
you know, it's an interesting thing because that particular thing, it should be the special teams coach is probably the person who's making the decision nominally. So that would be Chris Horton. But in truth, it really is an organizational decision when you get down to these things. Is look, we've got an option between several guys here, and Dayton Wade will be with us potentially for four seasons. If we find something of value, this is potentially a gold mine for us, as opposed to giving it to Sims or, you know, that malcontent Deontay Johnson. There's just such a limited upside even to a player like Anthony Miller.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to beat on him because I think he's done what reasonably could be hoped for a veteran receiver coming in here, but he's been in the league as long as Kirkwood is. He turns 31 on October 9th. So wow. he's not a young man. He has had 228 career targets in the NFL, which is a decent amount. The last few years, he's basically been at a very consistent couple of yards. No, actually, it's 2021 was the last time he had a reception before 24. And just had one reception for 16 yards last year for the Ravens. So to find significant playing time for him, you have to go back to 2020. That's 5 years ago.
Wow.
When we talk about Dez being Dez Bryant now, being out of the league for like 3 years and coming to the Ravens, yeah. This is that kind of a gap. You know, it's a pretty darn big resume gap to be willing to accept.
Yeah, and we tend to have that problem with receivers, so unfortunate. Right. But we're breaking the trend. We're drafting him now. So
there you go, and hopefully Wester is deserving of the opportunity in a way that Jaleel Scott and Jordan Lasley really weren't.
Yeah, so, of course.
Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But I am hearing all kinds of darling stories. I mean, another guy who really showed out at the stadium practice who had a great day was Xavier Guillory.
87?
Yeah, 87.
Yep. Yeah, he was big receiver, fast.
Yeah, looked terrific, got behind coverage a couple times and made about four big catches in the on the day. And it was just a nice day for him. All right, let's move on. To the players for whom the preseason action is the most important. What we'll just alternate. You're the guest. Go give me a player you think is really important, or a group of players if that's the way you want to bring it up. But you let me know.
Yep, I'll go Tez Walker on this first one. It looked like he came up limping during the open practice. I'm not sure what happened, but hopefully he's come back 100%.
Stadium or today or the joint practice?
Stadium. Stadium okay. practice. He did look like he was limping. I'm not sure what that was about, but hopefully he'll be 100% for this game. I'm looking to see how he looks off the ball, if he's able to beat press. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of press during the preseason, but if he's able to win at the top of the route with the limited film we can see on the broadcast, but I just want to see if he's able to create space, make himself available for the quarterbacks, and also show effort in the run game. Is he able to get behind his pads and really get into the DB's face and make sure he's not the reason why the play stops?
All very important things, by the way, and it's showing effort in the run game. I'm totally on the same page with you. I think that coming out of school, the big knock on him was didn't have a comeback route to go with the 7-8-9 routes, and so he needs some form of comeback, a hitch on the sideline. Yep. He's done a little bit better in camp. I think this year, one of the things has been nice, done some crossing routes, which is that's another thing that he really didn't necessarily have in his bag of tricks. But he's also come back for the football pretty well. So when the ball has been thrown up kind of duckily, wobbly, and there's been a lot of that from Cooper Rush so far this preseason, and he's been a guy who could come back for the football. So I'm happy to see that. He doesn't really have a lot of time with Lamar so far. And Lamar made that point at the podium today, is that, you know, he hasn't had a lot of reps with him. He threw him the touchdown at the Giants. Actually, that's a game we went to together, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this
last year. Said that was his catch last year. And then
it's crazy, because when he came out, we both pointed it out. Why is Tez out there? And it immediately touchdown.
Yeah. That was exciting. All right, I'll go to another player. We've talked about LaJonte Wester, and I think I don't have to mention him again, so I won't. I thought Rasheen Ali is a guy. Now, right now, I'd say Rashina Ali is on the outside looking in. Now, there is a way that he can make the roster. They can carry four running backs and carry only three tight ends, would be a not unreasonable solution. The reason, I give you the reasons why they might do it. One is they don't want to give up and lose Ali right away. I don't think he necessarily would be taken. He's not a big size and shape guy that everybody just has to have right now, but it might come up during the season as the, there's attrition at the running back position. But the other thing is, and this is where he might be valuable to a lot of other teams, is he can return kicks. And this is true of running backs generally. It's a zone run play that you're effectively running through when you return a kick under the current kickoff rules. There's going to be many more returns this year because the 35-yard line starting point for touchbacks is very punitive. And so because of that, I expect that, the running backs are going to have more value across the league. And there'd be, if the typical team carries 3.2 running backs this year, maybe that's 3.6, or last year, maybe it's 3.6 this year because of the new rules. The Ravens do seem to be out front of it a little bit and realizing that running backs are appropriate for this job. All right, Frazier, I can't hear you for whatever reason now, so I'm afraid he might have dropped off again. And I have some connection issues. Just continuing on, I'll give you my next player or players who I think are important. And we'll talk about the tight end group because I think there's a good two-man competition as I see it right now for the third tight end spot. And it's not including Patrick Ricard, but the third tight end spot I think could go to Zaire Mitchell-Payton or Scotty Washington. Scotty Washington has a little bit more experience so far. I think he's played one NFL game. And Zaire Mitchell-Payton is an IPPP candidate. So if he's on the practice squad, he doesn't have to take a practice squad spot. They're both big guys, either of whom could block within the Ravens system because a lot of what they're going to be asked to do is very similar to a wide receiver. Maybe Mitchell-Payton it'd be a slightly better guy to be playing in line. Frazier, you there? Okay, still not back. So let's keep going here. Anyway, I think that's important was the Zaire Mitchell-Payton and Scotty Washington competition. Moving on, I'll go to the inside linebacker spot because I think there's a fight for two practice squad spots that's going on right now between three inside linebackers. And those are Chandler Martin and Jay Higgins and William Kwenku. And Kwenku, I wouldn't have put him in this group. Let's add Frazier back here. There's Frazier. Okay. Hey Frazier. So just catching up here. I talked about the backup tight end, the third tight end, whether or not the Ravens even carry one. And then Zaire Mitchell-Payton and Scotty Washington are kind of the two players who are up for that. And then I moved on to the inside linebackers. I think there's three guys fighting for two spots, Chandler Martin, Jay Higgins, and William Kwenku. Not on the 53. There's no spots available in the 53, I think, with Hummel,
right.
Buchanan, Simpson, and Roquan. They've got all the inside linebackers they need. But there are two practice squad spots which could be used. I'm also fairly confident that they'll assign two spots to inside linebackers because those guys tend to make very good call-ups in case you need a special teams player.
Yep, 100% agree. That's what I was thinking. We think of guys like Brendan Ayibadejo or McClellan. Those guys come to mind when you think of linebackers that are making contributions on special teams.
Right. Right. You definitely don't. It's not a place where you can afford to end up either too small or too big, so you can't necessarily ask Brent Urban to cover kicks. But you can if you have an extra linebacker, you can figure out how to work out the speed and keep a safety on the outside of your kick coverage when you're in a year where you're presumably going to have a lot of run backs.
Agreed.
Each of them has had their moments. By the way, Chandler Martin's looked like a hard hitter. Jay Higgins has been around the ball, and William Kwenku had that sack today. He's made other plays too. I don't want to pretend like that's the only one, but. All three of those guys, I mean, they're guys who could end up on somebody else's roster before the season is over if they have a decent showing in the preseason, put some good tape out there.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think something else I'm excited to see is the outside linebacker competition with Ojabo and Adisa Isaac.
Jabo's, from what I've seen through clips and stuff like that, he's looked underwhelming. I really want to see what it looks like in live action, if he's able to set the edge effectively and, I don't know, not look slow. He's looking sluggish out there. I don't know if it's just me and my vantage point, but what have you seen from Ojabo this camp?
So he's had a few pressures that I've noted during camp notes, you know, maybe four, I'd say during the time that have come up, and that's in, you know, 12 days of practice or so. I wouldn't necessarily catch every single one. And there's a lot of brother-in-law play during the preseason where they're just not going all out and they're not in pads, they're going half speed, whatever it might be, and Ojabo might be on the field and it doesn't really represent an opportunity. He's made a couple of decent run plays. Adisa Isaac, I've seen much more of him being on the ball, around the ball, and containing on run plays, but I've seen less of him in terms of pressures. And so, you know, the Ravens are in kind of a catch 22 position because Ojabo has only 1 year left. They own no part of his future after this year. So, you know, it's kind of like the JAD situation, is that they are, you know, the total return possible is only what you can imagine for him this year. Whereas with Adisa Isaac, you get two things. One is he's a better special teams player than Ojabo. So you have that value in terms of him being on the roster actually every week as a fifth outside linebacker. The second thing you have is there's more potential for growth in the future. So I do think the Ravens are only going to carry five outside linebackers. What they could do is they could carry five and IR one. That's possible. And there could be a guy who's on IR DTR and could be back at some point during the season. The Ravens leave themselves that option for a replacement. So it's not a strict black or white decision, but if it's forced into a black or white decision because everybody's healthy and no one wants the IR designation, then I say it's Adisa Isaac over Ojabo, as from what I've seen so far.
I agree with you. I think after years and years of watching the NFL and going through this cut down process, the roster moves make themselves. I think injury will come up, God forbid, but it just seems to work out perfectly for some reason. Like, I remember 2 years ago, we kept, that center, Sam Mustipher, and we were scratching our head, why do we keep Mustipher? And the next thing you know, Linderbaum goes out first week with a neck injury. Yeah. And it's like, wow, that's crazy how that worked out. But it's weird. The NFL roster's always even out regardless of what you do. So I think things will work out for the outside linebacker position.
Okay, well, it's maybe another one I want to make sure I bring up before we're done here is the offensive line, because I don't think the bottom of the offensive line is completely determined. There are a number of sure spots, and I'll just read them off real quickly on the offensive line. Tyler Linderbaum has a job. Ben Cleveland has a job. Joe Noteboom has a job, and an important one as a backup. Roger Rosengarten is on the team. Carson Vinson is on the team. Andrew Voorhees, Daniel Fa'alele, and Ronnie Stanley. That's eight. There are two spots remaining on what I believe will be a 10-man roster, which would mean that Nick Samak, Garrett Dellinger, and perhaps Darian Dalcourt are in competition for those spots. Darian Dalcourt's played a little bit of center, so he'd be a guy who could be there. Garrett Dellinger has been given some center snaps this camp, and Nick Samak, that's his primary position. He also plays some guard. So the order of entry in this game will tell us a lot about where they view those guys in a relative sense. I would say probably Samak's been the number two center so far, so the other part of that is that Warhop really seems to like LSU offensive linemen, and they drafted two of them this year in Dellinger and
Jones,
Emory Jones. Yeah. So they like both of them. And if they, it would not surprise me if Dellinger makes the team. It's probably Dalcourt is probably the long shot. So the most likely event, as far as I'm concerned, is that Samak and Dellinger make it. Dalcourt is out, and they also given some snaps at center. I think he's been really underwhelming to Reed Holsky.
Wow. Okay. What have you seen from Dellinger?
You know, it's very difficult to tell anything about offensive linemen so far. I, you know, at least the first games I'll be able to actually score, start on Thursday.
Fair.
So, I don't have the benefit of instant replay on anything that has been done so far. There is some video of offensive line play at the stadium practice, but there's not enough.
It's not the same.
Total stuff. So anyway, I want to see some true non-brother-in-law live fire reps for these guys, and all of them should get very significant playing time. Samak and Dellinger and Dalcourt, probably each of them could play a half of football or even more in this game. And then you'll get it into some of the guys. They cut Ozzie Hutchinson already, which is already making him a little thinner at tackle. And the guy there who might get a little more playing time is Jared Lichtenhan, who's the 6'8 guy from Oregon State. He looks, I hate to tag somebody with this right away when they come to the NFL, but he looks very soft.
Wow.
He's a guy who
Daniel Falele soft.
And Daniel Falele is much more not fat for a tremendously heavy lineman. Lichtenhan is more like he's got some soft weight around his belly, and he's also got some soft weight in his arms. Where I can live with it in the belly if you're otherwise a good offensive lineman. Softness in the arms is something I really don't like in an offensive lineman. That usually means guy needs time in an NFL weight room to transform his body a little bit.
Looking like a lunch lady out there.
I've heard that one before, but okay. So anyway, we'll as you kind of mentioned earlier, we'll look at the order of entry for those offensive linemen as well as some of these defensive players. Other positions you'd like to talk about?
You didn't mention corner, did you?
I did kind of mention we talked through corner a little bit in terms of the four guys and how we would rank them. So I thought we'd leave that out of there.
Fair. Well, I guess we could talk about Aeneas Peoples because he's someone that I would love to see in action against live reps. I want to see what his pass rush moves really look like, and also if he's able to hold himself in the run game, because at the end of the day, that's going to be his weakness, to see if he's able to be effective like a Matt BK and really have a solid foundation when holding his blocks and trying to maintain gap integrity.
Yeah. There's talk about gap integrity today because the Ravens allowed a fair number of big runs to the Colts. And the one thing that Matt Abike exactly diagnosed the problem, as far as I'm concerned, and this is good on-field awareness and good self-effacing commentary at the podium, was basically to say, look, Jonathan Taylor is a very patient back, and we might have been too aggressive and not concerned enough about gap integrity in this day of practice. And you could listen to his actual words. He didn't say exactly that, but he said basically exactly that.
No, and he articulated it very well. I appreciated his response. It was very in depth.
Yeah, I did. You rarely get that from a player at the podium, and it didn't even seem like he was 100% pointing to himself in that regard. But he talked about, you know, if you go here, then he'll take the B gap. But he's waiting for you to commit to make his run. He's extremely patient, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a good job. The other thing that's hilarious about that interview was Jair Alexander coming on and asked him why he wanted his autograph or whatever the question was.
Jair's fitting in really well with this team. I'm loving it.
he's really insane. I agree. Aeneas Peoples is a guy that they really need to figure out. How are they going to use him? Because he's a difficult guy to fit into a situational pass rush role when they've already got Matt Abike on the team who plays that spot. And the only other place I can really see him is if you get ahead in games, then Peoples can probably help you close it out if you want another pass rusher on the field.
Give Jones a break.
Yeah, could give Jones a break under those circumstances. Yeah, he's not big enough to play nose if you're concerned about the other team running the ball, but he's big enough to play nose if you know they're going to pass it.
Yeah, exactly.
and then you got a slippery player on the inside who could probably help you out. So I'll be interested to see how they use him. I'm looking forward to it. Just along those lines, Jason Jones and CJ Okoye are guys who we saw a couple of plays from John Jenkins just today in the joint practice, one pressure, another good stop on a run. for me to believe that job is all but sealed up. We'll see. We'll, you know, there'll be, there's more action still to happen in camp and a couple preseason games. And of course he could get hurt. They could not like some things about his conditioning potentially, but my guess is he's got the job. But Jason Jones and CJ Okoye, each of them has been fairly difficult to observe in positive situations during camp. Let's put it that way. Okoye is enormous. And he's mentioned for being enormous a lot. And he's played already 2 years as a developmental player on, I think it might be the Raiders practice squad, but he's on another team's practice squad. And, you know, he's a guy that at the top of the practice squad, he might be a guy that you could activate to replace Travis Jones if he was hobbled for a week and you didn't want to put him on IR. But he's also a guy who has terrible conditioning. And on one of the practices, he was huffing and puffing after two snaps that he'd been in. And I later saw him on the stationary bike with John Jenkins later in practice. I'm thinking, not good. This is not a good look now.
Not at all. It's not good.
All right. All right. Any more? I got one more if you don't have another.
We talked a lot about the punt returns. Yeah, I feel like we covered everything. We covered safety as well, too, right?
No, we did. We didn't cover safety yet. That's the one I still want to talk about because I think it's three players playing for two spots. Sanusi Kane has kind of separated himself from the others. Today Kyle Hamilton was out, so it actually kind of made it easy to see who was playing. But Sanusi Kane was in there as a starter opposite Malachi Starks, had a lot of deep end responsibilities. Also, was flying around and was near the football a lot. He wasn't perfect when he was near the football, but he was around the football a lot. Had a pass defense in the backfield that was nice. That's more of a dime linebacker play anyway, but it's still nice to see him make plays. And he had another pass defense on the back end, and then he had another where he fell down in coverage on the back end and allowed a touchdown.
That's not good.
That was unfortunate, but it was honestly, I'd say more plus than minus today from Kane. And I think he hasn't done anything to reduce his chance that he's the third safety. So I think, you know, it looks right now like the Ravens are going to play the hand they've got and have Sanusi Kane be the third safety, which means he's the first man off the bench if anything happens to Hamilton or Starks. It's kind of scary, actually.
Yeah.
And then you've got Lowry and Braid behind him, who might only be one of those two will make the team.
Who's out there available right now if we needed a veteran?
There are a fair number of older guys. Some of them just been signed. The big one that I thought would be the cheapest and most familiar, wouldn't let the Ravens down on the back end, was Chuck Clark.
Yep.
But he's going to Pittsburgh. Steelers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate. Other than that, I'm not sure. There are some guys who are like mid-range price guys who probably will drop to be minimum salary guys as soon as the season begins because they really need to get a year in and have somebody looking at them. I don't think that Justin Simmons has been signed yet, but I could be wrong about that.
I thought he was.
You thought he was? Okay, you could be right. I'm not. I'd have to really look at the outstanding free agent safeties, but I'll look at it right now. See if I can Google that.
Yeah, I have the same sentiment as you. I'm not sure if we're going to be comfortable with just Sanusi Kane. Right. Rookie and Hamilton in the back end.
Yeah, Justin Simmons, according to this, is still available.
Okay.
So I don't know if this is I don't know if these are all true or not. Marcus Williams is available. You interested? Yeah. Quandre Diggs, Jesse Bates, according to this, is still available.
Oh wow.
This says for the Falcons. I'm not sure if he's actually truly available. This Google search looks like it might not be. Current information is, I guess, what I would say. But there are a few guys who are available, just Julian Blackman and Javon Holland. According to this, Javon Holland is with the Giants. I don't know if that's true or not.
Not sure either.
Yeah, so... Yeah, no, Javon Holland was signed to a three-year, $45.3 million contract. So this must have been what I'm looking at here is not a current set of free agent safeties. So anyway, I think we set that aside for now. I think there are guys, the veterans that are available very close to the minimum. I just think the Ravens are more likely to play the cards they have. They like Reuben Lowry. He's kind of a clone for Jeremy Lucien from a couple of years ago, a guy who was a mechanical engineering degree. He has a... He's a member of some sort of rocketry club, so he really sounds like a power nerd. and the Ravens, they have a type. I mean, they're the team who took a chance on John Urschel. They you know, ended up with both of these guys in terms of mechanical engineers. They definitely have a type when it comes to liking guys who learn the playbook quickly. I actually think that was a big thing with Lowry. They really loved how quickly Jeremy Lucien came to know the playbook, and they. And they decided Lowry was similar, might be a little bit better athlete too. He's 5'9", 204. He's a little bit small or more compact, I'll say. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. But has the size to play safety, I would say.
I would 5'9" does kind of sound a little scary, even though Ardarius Washington's 5'9" and he's a menace back
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's 5'9" and he's about 25 pounds lighter too. So
okay,
Lowry's a hitter. I mean, I don't think there's any question there. I think, you know, he needs experience at safety, and things have not been perfect for him at camp, but he has made some plays. He had at least one interception. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see how that works out, obviously. But that's really the last one I have. I'd like to see Brent Urban get on the field in this game, kind of prove that he's still in shape.
Yep.
And can play against some of the twos and threes that he'll face in this game. I don't want to see a lot from him. I don't think that's necessary. But on the other hand, the Ravens brought him back, you know, potentially to play some actual snaps in this preseason.
Yeah, and we're thin at line in terms of rotation. So he's going to have to get some burn, which is not ideal because he's going to be crucial to our what we need to do this season. So hopefully he stays healthy.
Yeah. All right. Well, great stuff. Always a lot of fun doing the matchup shows with you and this, what to look forward to. I anticipate we'll have a shorter show for each of the next two games before the Commanders game and again before the last game at home. Wait a minute. Last game at home.
Dallas next week. And then
Cowboys game on the road. The Commanders at home.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That Dallas game.
Cowboys and Commanders both on the road.
I'll be there for that Dallas game. I'm excited.
Look, that's nice. We still have not been to a win in that stadium, so I wanna get back. I'm still kind of pissed off that with the Ravens
16, right?
Well, they lost in 16, and then in 24 we had planned to go, and then we bailed out after the Ravens lost their first two games, and we couldn't make it work for some other reasons related to Maureen's work. So
I remember that.
All right. Frazier, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You guys can find me at @X/Twitter at @F_Rave8. That's @F_RAVE8.
All right. Other folks out there, hit me up if you want to be on a show, a short, for example. DMs are always open. Please like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. And if you're not subscribing to the podcast, but you're listening now, consider subscribing. This is, I think, some of the best content you'll get on a weekly basis that gets into any kind of depth and detail on the Ravens, and love to have you as a regular listener, as many people are already. Frazier, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.